We thank you for listening to the weekly sermon of First United Methodist Church, Missouri City, Texas. We're a church that's making disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. For more information about the church and its ministries, or how we can pray for you, visit us on the web at fumcmc.org. If you desire to make a quick contribution in support of our ministries, you can text to give. Simply text the amount you want to give to 281-369-4870 and follow the instructions. And now, as you listen, we hope that you find this podcast meaningful and transformational in your journey of faith.
So the story goes that the Lone Ranger and Tonto were camping one night, and in the middle of the night, Tonto woke up, and he turns to the Lone Ranger, and he says, "Kimosabe, look up to the sky. What do you see?" And the Lone Ranger says, "Well, I see millions of stars." Tonto says, "Well, what does that mean to you?" And Lone Ranger says, "Well, astrologically, it tells me that Saturn is in Leo. Astronomically, it tells me that there are millions of galaxies and possibility of planets all around us. Theologically, it tells me that the Lord is God and the Lord is good, and we are just small in all of this vastness. Meteorologically, it tells me that we're going to have a pretty good day tomorrow. And it looks like it's about 3:15 in the morning. That's what it tells me. What does it tell you, Tonto?" And Tonto gets silent for a moment. He says, "Well, it tells me someone stole my tent." It worked here, Matt. Oh, did I cross the line? I'm sorry. I crossed the line. So, yeah, I love that joke. In fact, yesterday when we were doing our 47-mile bike ride, whatever it was, 46 miles, I just thought about that joke and laughed the whole way. It was just a giggle the whole time. So what it tells me, though, is that Tonto and Lone Ranger were not Jewish. Because if they were Jewish, celebrating the feast that we're looking at today, they would be extremely bothered that their tent was gone. Because the celebration today in the Jewish world is probably the second most important celebration of all the ones given. Next week, we're going to look at the Day of Atonement. That was probably the most important, the most holy. But today, we're looking at a feast called Sukkot. And Sukkot is Hebrew for tent or for booth or for tabernacle, depending how you look at it. And so sometimes this feast is called Sukkot. Sometimes it's called the Feast of Tabernacle or Feast of Booths. But it all centers around, for 1 week, the Jewish people lived in a tent. They lived there, slept there, worshiped there, prayed there, repeated the Shema there, ate there. That's where they were for 1 week. Now, the Leviticus tells us it was 1 week long, which in the Jewish world would be how many days? 8 days. Good job. So the first day and the eighth day, they were not allowed to work. They were to treat that as Sabbath because it was a Sabbath. The rest of the days, they could carry on part of their life, but they also had to worship. And when God gave the instructions for this feast, he was very specific in the book of Leviticus. He told them what to make the tents out of. They were to make the tents out of the branches from a palm tree, a myrtle tree, and an olive tree. And that's how they would make the tent. And they would leave a hole in the roof of the tent so that when they looked up, they would see the sky and they would remember their time in the wilderness. Well, over the years, apparently, the tradition, the custom changed, and they didn't always make the tents or their booths out of the branches of those of the myrtle tree, the palm tree, and the olive tree. They would start using animal hides and canvas and start doing that. And so about by the time Jesus came onto the scene, the Pharisees and the rabbis had begun a new tradition of taking those same branches, the palm tree, myrtle tree, olive tree, and to bind them together so it kind of looked like a pom-pom. We have that picture? There, kind of like that. And a piece of fruit, citron, which goes back to Leviticus, and I know y'all read Leviticus, so I don't have to explain that to you. And so they would have this pom-pom and this fruit, and they would worship with that. They would go into the temple, and they would sing, and they would dance, and they would wave their pom-pom or their lulav and their citron, and they would go crazy. I mean, this was a celebration. And in fact, there was a rabbi who once said, if you had not experienced Sukkot in the temple, you didn't know what a celebration was. This was a party. And they would go crazy. And they would repeat what's known as the halah, which are Psalms 113 to 118. And they would chant those again and again and again. And when they got to Psalm 118, verse 25, that said this, Lord, save us. Lord, grant us success. They would go absolutely bananas with their lulavs and their citron. And let me just show you. Ready? Go ahead and stand. No, go ahead and stand. Now, went past again. So this is kind of like the first terrible towel at a football game, right? So you have your lulav in your right hand. Raise your right hand with your lulav. You got to have a little bit of imagination here. Don't wave it yet. I didn't tell you to wave. You're breaking the rules. You better go to Day of Atonement next week. And then the citron in this hand, and then you get excited and shout and yay, and like pretend you're at a football game. Yeah, there you go. And then at a certain point, the rabbi would go, Lord, save us. No. I'm sorry. You're supposed to repeat that. I was speaking Hebrew, I guess. Lord, save us. Lord, grant us success. And then when that happened, the people would go insane. There you go. Go ahead, have a seat. You could be Jewish. We haven't had that kind of... Matt, you didn't stand and Sukkot it with us. So it was a party. It was lively. It was fun compared to next week, which is a downer. Then the rabbis added another wrinkle into this feast, which was okay because God would spell out the guidelines and you could kind of do other things with it. They understood the importance of rain. Sukkot would happen the seventh month. It would be the end of the harvest season, be the kind of the dry season, and the Jewish people knew that they needed rain, and so for the harvest. And so this also became an opportunity to pray for the new season, for lots of rain, so that the crops would flourish. And so this is like the best part of Sukkot. On the eighth day is when it would go absolutely crazy. The priest would, everyone would gather in the temple and the people would be doing their lulavs and their citrons and worshiping, singing and chanting the halah. And the priests would form this line, this procession. And they would walk to this area called the Pool of Siloam. And no one really knows where it is, even though a couple of churches claim to be built on it. But the Pool of Siloam was a place of healing. It was a place of giving life. It was like living water. Right? And they would have these golden pitchers, and the priest would scoop up the water in the golden pitchers, and they would walk back through the water gate of the temple and into the temple itself. And the people at this point would be going, Lord, save us. Lord, grant us success, as they watched the priest walk in. Now, on either side of the altar for Sukkot were two large, and they were high, two large silver funnels. And there were ramps that led up to these silver funnels. And so on Sukkot, they would walk up, these priests would walk up on this side and on this side. On this side would be water. On this side would be wine. Wine is very important in the Jewish world. It's a symbol of the covenant. It's a symbol of heaven. And so the priests would come up on this side with wine, and the priests on this side with water from the Pool of Siloam, the living water. And they would begin to pour. And when they began to pour, the congregation would get absolutely silent. And it was the most solemn part of the whole celebration. On the eighth day, just silence as the place was packed with thousands of people. And in the water, you would hear it, they say, because it would just be rushing out and down the funnel and down the temple as the red as the wine and the water mixed. You with me on how incredible this is? And then the head priest would read out of the book of Isaiah, the 12th chapter, the verse that goes like this. He goes, "With joy you will draw water from the wells of salvation." And what the Jews believed is that when the Messiah would come, right? Get this. That water would stream into the Dead Sea, and the Dead Sea would have life. There'd be fish and there'd be algae and be teeming with life. It would no longer be dead, but it would be alive. And that's what they believed they were doing as the water and the red wine were flowing down. They were making this prophecy come to life for the prediction and the coming of the Messiah, right? Now, according to John's Gospel, chapter 7, this is amazing to me. According to John's Gospel, on the eighth day of Sukkot, well, first off, on the fourth day of Sukkot, Jesus was in Jerusalem because he would have been because it was required. He taught in the temple in such a way that people wondered, is this the Messiah? Right? So the buzz started going around about Jesus. So then on the eighth day, when the lulavs were going and the Lord save us were being yelled out and chanted, and at the moment where the water and the wine and the crowd got silent and the priest, the high priest, read from the book of Isaiah, John tells us that on the eighth day, on that day, the last day of Sukkot, the most important day of the festival, Jesus stood up in the temple, and when it was solemn and quiet, the seventh chapter, this is what he said: "All who are thirsty shall come to me. All who believe in me should drink. As the scripture said concerning me, rivers of living water will flow out from within him." Jesus just told the Jewish people who were muttering whether or not he was the Messiah, for the first time in John's Gospel, said, "I am the Messiah. I am the one who's going to bring life to the Dead Sea, who's going to bring abundant life to your life. And you don't need water flowing from this funnel and from this funnel, because it's going to flow from me like a living spring." And the people must have just lost it. And if that wasn't enough, on the ninth day, the next day, people were getting ready to get back to their normal lives. Jesus shows up in the court of the women. He had just healed a blind man at the Pool of Siloam, the living water. He shows up at the court of the women. And in the court of the women were four very large candelabras, 75 feet tall. And each of the candelabras had four branches with a bowl of oil on each branch. And all during Sukkot, those would burn. And they say that the light from those four candelabras was so bright that they would not only light up the city, but they would light up the countryside for miles. Well, Sukkot's over. These flames are out. Jesus stands in the center of the woman's court of the woman by these candelabras. And according to John's Gospel, this is what he says: "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me won't walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." Okay, so people didn't get it on the fourth day that he was teaching as one with authority. They didn't get it on the eighth day when he stood in the center of the temple with water flowing, saying, I am the living water. Come to me, all who thirst. Life will come from me. They didn't get it that day. On the ninth day, he stood and he said, I am the light of the world. You think these are bright. They're gone now. But I am the light of the world. I will light the darkness. That's Sukkot. And as followers of Jesus, we're not asked to live in tents any longer, right? We're not asked to wave lulavs and citrons and chant the halal. Because we're not waiting for the Messiah. Because we believe the Messiah has come. We believe the Messiah is here. And the Messiah, our Jesus, stands in the center of the temple, of this church, of the sanctuary. And he says, I am the living water. Come to me, all who thirst, and I will give you life. And I will light up the dark places that are in your life. Look, some of you, I don't know what's going on in your life. Some of you I do. Some of you I don't. Maybe you're here this morning and you have the spots of your heart, these parts of your soul that just feel dead, that are tired. They're just worn out. Maybe you stood at the grave of a loved one and you're still just broken and you just want to be whole and you want to feel revived. Maybe for you, that's that marriage that you thought was just so great and now it's hanging by a thread. Or maybe it's relationship with your spouse or your kid, or your grandkid or a friend or a parent, and things just seem frayed and you're just tired and your soul hurts. And if you've been there, you know that feeling. Or maybe there's just so much stress at work that you can't even breathe. Or maybe you're one of those who the month is still going but there's no more money to pay the bills at the end of the month. And you wonder, you know, and you're just tired. If you've been those, you know what that's like. Well, this morning, Jesus stands right in front of you. And he says, if you are tired, if you are thirsty, if you are worn, if you are in the dark, if you are just ready to quit, come and drink of me, for I am the living water, and you will have life. Doesn't mean your problems are going to go away, but you'll know you're not alone. And your heart can be refreshed, and Jesus will offer you life. Not boring, mundane life, but abundant life. Because Sukkot is here. John's gospel in the very beginning says, and the word became flesh and dwelt among us. And the word John used for dwelt is the same word for tabernacle. And John wanted the people to know right up front that the Sukkot, that Messiah is here, and they would not be alone. So those of you who are thirsty, those of you who are tired, those of you who are dry and parched and in the dark and just want life, come and drink. Because he is the living water, and life will come. Would you receive this benediction? And now may the Lord bless you. May the Lord keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. And may the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace, both now and forever. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, go from this place. And may the peace and the love and the grace of God go with you. May you know, may you remember, may you never forget that there is nothing you can do, nothing, that will ever make God love you less. Because when God sees you, he doesn't see the mistakes that you make. He simply says, wow, you're nothing but the best of the best of the best. And can you imagine, just imagine what your day would be like if you lived it believing that. You'd have a pretty good day. Take care. God bless. And we'll see you next week.